Armand Bennett. He also went out to an incident in which a mentally ill man was taken into custody by the NLPD, and he was taken to the ground in such a manner that it injured his kidneys and he had to be taken to the hospital. We also went to an incident in which a woman who was caught shoplifting allegedly had her face slammed into the holding cell and causing 3 stitches to have to be put into her eye. We also had a man who was taken to jail for disorderly conduct, more or less, and his face was slammed to the ground and he had to be taken to the hospital. What's interesting about that incident, and this is something that you can all help with as well, when the New Orleans Police Department eventually did take the man to the jail to book him, the jail told them to take off their cameras, but they could not bring their cameras inside so that you could see what was going on. I wanted you to know that. We are going to address the jail monitor about that issue, but that's disastrous all around. I think you all agree with me.
Right.
We've got 2 troubled departments under consent degrees, and we're going to take off the cameras watching both of us. Obviously, we don't want that type of thing to happen. So those are the incidents we went to our little staff last week, but let's talk about Mr. Bennett. That incident occurred about 1:30 a.m. I was called at 2 a.m. I went out to the scene. I got out there about 3 a.m. into Algiers. The incident was problematic from the beginning. I'm just going to tell you that. We had a lot of questions from the very beginning about what happened. The way the cars were parked, the type of stop, it was an unsafe stop. We've got questions about how the officers even addressed them. And then we found out about the incidents that went on days before and the alleged legal cause for stopping and frisking. And so all of these were problematic for us. Doesn't mean the officers did anything wrong, but we have a lot of questions to ask. And in the end, we'll find out what those answers are. But we were there that night. They did not, if they had not alerted us, there would have been a problem, obviously, with that. But at least we were able to get out to the scene and make sure that they separated the officers so that they couldn't discuss it. Remember, Danziger and Glover, those were issues, officers getting together and making up stories and whatnot. So we made sure that they keep those folks separate so they can't do that type of thing, that they're collecting all the evidence. I can tell you there's a time when I've been here since 2010, that there were times where they didn't even look for shell casings, right? There were no metal detectors or dogs or anybody looking for evidence. It was a very different scene in those days. They were looking for all those things because we're there to make sure that they're doing that. On Thursday of last week, we went to the officer, the interviews of the officers involved in the shooting, and got a chance to hear what they were saying. But before that, we were able to formulate questions that we had formulated from being out there at the scene and from just reading about what went on. But we also did something critical, which really hasn't happened a lot in the past. We reached out to the attorney she reached out to us, the attorney for the young man, and we spoke to his mother as well. I got a call one night, I think Wednesday night. Well, let me back up. When we go out to the scene that night, they say it's a minor wound, a grazed wound, and everything's fine. We'll be booking him later. I find out later on in the week that he's in ICU. That's problematic. Now, it could be for other reasons than the use of force, but you can see why that makes me suspicious when you're telling me everything's minor and then you get out and it's something major. So those are the kind of issues that's why we roll out to the scene so we can see what's going on. Got a call from the attorney, Nandy Campbell, and she said, I can't see my client. The NLPD will not let me see my client. And David, I think you can kind of feel, I've been a prosecutor and a defense attorney, but I think as a defense attorney, I would be just, you know, beside myself at that point. The NLPD is saying that the attorney can't even see their client. Obviously, that's problematic. We had to make some phone calls to make sure that happened. The boy's mother didn't know where he was. The man's mother didn't know where, couldn't see him either. And now he's in ICU and she doesn't know what's going on with them. Even if he has to go to jail, even if he has to be charged, why can't we treat the families with respect? Why can't we treat everybody in the process with respect? And so we had to make sure that she could find out what's going on with her son. Some basic human rights, right? So we stayed involved in that. Eventually he was released and booked, but we got a chance to watch and see what was going on and make sure that we got the mother's questions as well. Talked to her directly and got her questions, the attorney's questions. And now we have a more well-rounded investigation because we're asking all these questions. There's our questions, the lawyer's questions, PIB's questions, the mother's questions. We're asking those all. And the answers that we got from the officer really raise more questions. So, just to tell you this, we got a ways to go on this investigation. It's not done by any means. We have a lot more questions to ask, and we're looking at it very critically. The consent decree monitor called us today and said they wanted to be briefed on it, and we did that. And we'll make sure that, we already dealt with the FBI as well on it, so we will be making sure that there are lots of eyes on this case. So when we get to the final outcome, we'll be able to come to you and say, we did everything possible to make sure the New Orleans Police Department did the best investigation they could, right? So that's where that case is at. Then I want to, just if I can, you can ask me questions about that in a minute, but I want to address one more thing. When it comes to the new police chief, how can you be more involved in that? I think, was anybody on the committee the first committee for that hired Chief Servette? And was anybody on that?
Wasn't everybody?
A lot of people quit. There's a lot of dissatisfaction. I'm trying to get some firsthand news about what went on there, but you absolutely have to have a say in your new police chief. The question is, how are you going to get that? Is it realistic to have, you know, a committee of 85 people trying to pick chief? Probably not. But make sure that you hold your council and your mayor accountable for what that process is going to be, and make sure they stick to that process, and that they're very transparent about what's going to happen. And then you can also weigh in on that. I know I saw a lot of you. One of the things I liked about the consent decree monitor process was how the public got a chance to come ask a lot of questions and be very involved and give their input to the judge in that process. So, not suggesting any one way, but just making sure that you are involved and that our officials are accountable for that process. With that, I'll open up for you. Any questions? Okay, I think the Coleman in the back came up.
I'm just going out.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I have a few questions. According to the consent decree, you know, there's supposed to be a full statement that the officer is supposed to make before the end of shift. That's how it is worded. And then the supervisor within 72 hours of that police officer is to also make a statement or submit a written statement. In addition to that, if the police officer has a partner, he is also, or she is also mandated by the consent decree to also make a written statement before the end of shift, meaning they cannot leave until they make that statement. Use of force policy. We've had two meetings with the consent decree monitors, and they could not come up with a use of force policy that the New Orleans Police Department uses. Now, to your, can you provide us some information as to whether or not they actually have developed a use of force policy?
Yeah.
And another, camera discipline. There's specific information in the consent decree that the police officer, if that officer's camera is not on, that they are to be disciplined. And that is the way that it is worded, discipline. And want to know what's the status of that.
She got to remember those.
Right. Well, I don't mind. And I guess basically, you know, that's it. I think that's enough. I got $20 more.
Yeah, but no, they're all awesome. Very good questions. I don't know the answer to the first one about the reports because I did not go to the interviews of the officer, but I can get an answer for you on that. My deputy went out to those interviews, so she got to see any reports that were written about abuse of force. The use of force policy, as you know, as the monitor said in their first report,
it's right there.
Yeah. What the NOPD did was it approved a whole book of policies back in 2013, I think it was, and disseminated them to their troops and started training them, but there was just one problem. What was that problem? The consent decree monitor didn't approve them, the court didn't approve them. So now they had to go back to the drawing board, and they're going step by step on the policies. So for instance, the use of force policy, to my knowledge, is not complete. The camera policy is complete, and I want to say it's 356 is the policy number, but I'll get you that as well. But the camera policy is complete, and it says you will record all traffic stops, all public confrontations and all calls for service. So, yeah, we're looking for discipline.
Just right quick.
In violation.
And you indicated that the consent decree monitors were not on the scene. They are supposed to be on the scene. And if they were not on the scene, why weren't they not on the scene? Because they are paid a lot of money. I don't know if they actually get paid, but when they do get paid, they get paid a heck of a lot of money. And the question is, to your knowledge, be candid, why were they not on that scene? They're supposed to be there. This is very important and critical to the, you know, to the making police officers constitutional and responsible and accountable.
They were not in town that day. They were not in town that day. They did not have anybody scheduled to be here that weekend. They promised when they were hired that they would be here during the weekdays, is what I think they promised.
Right.
They did not say they would. I think they didn't say every weekend.
Every week.
So I think they said weekdays.
Monday through Friday.
That's right. I think they said Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday.
They didn't say.
Without the Saturday or Sunday.
We asked them about the weekend. They said that they would try, especially on major event weekends.
But they made statements that they're gonna have somebody.
No, they said that they could.
Let me tell you this. They did not have anybody scheduled for that weekend. I think the person was coming into town that Monday. The weekend was, somebody had left Friday and that weekend was open. And they let us know that. So we are gonna respond anyway. They don't respond, even when they're here, they don't respond to all the shootings. Like the other incidents I issued, the woman getting her head slammed up against the wall allegedly. They were here in town, but they didn't go to that. They were doing something else that night. So we are going to be their eyes and their ears, and we don't mind doing that. We don't mind doing that. We're going to be their eyes and ears on the ground and make sure that they know, and make sure that they know what's going on. And we're not varnishing it. When we have issues, we're raising it immediately to them. And it's a nice one to punch. I would like them here on occasion as well. I want their mic in there as well. And don't think we're not drafting on their power, because we've enjoyed that.
Let's get some of the rest of the questions out. Reverend Calhoun, let's go down, and then Ron in the back, and then Malcolm.
We need a pen or something to write this down.
Why don't y'all give your questions, your comments? Let's get them out on the floor, and then let her
What happened to resisting arrest? They actually get out the car, and they grab you by the arm, throw you on the ground, put their feet on the back of your neck, hit you with a taser. And they said his hand, stop resisting.
Okay, so that's resisting arrest, okay? Malcolm?
Yeah, my comment has to do with the cameras. That was one of the things that we at CUC really fought for. And studies across the country have already seen that there's an 80% reduction in complaints against police and forces that use these cameras. So these cops need a camera on them. And what's amazing about this Lewis incident is she did not have a camera on.
Right.
And therefore, we have to really push on this. Because if we don't, and this is the first incident that has occurred. And so we need to have cameras, not only on patrol officers, but on the investigators as well. We don't know what the detectives are saying once they show up on the scene. And the kind of conversations that they're having with each other in terms of whether or not they're gonna cover stuff up or let it slide.
David, I'm gonna come back to you. Ron, and then Ms. Williams back there.
Everybody needs a pen and pencil now. Ms. Hudson, for my 28th time, and since the day you've been here, tell us what you need from the legislature, what we voted for in 1992, the powers you need us to advocate to elected officials, the subpoena power, and the communication power. Because at the end of the day, we voted for your office, but we got blindsided with Inspector Criminal. So at the end of the day, give us what you need us to put the pressure on our legislature with what you need to make this office work like we voted for in 1992.
All right, Ms. Williams, and then we'll get a response, and then there's three more of y'all will come tonight.
This is my letter I just got from the police department concerning the death of my family member. As you know, there have been numerous members of my family. My son, my sister, my two sons, my sister, my grandbaby, my dad, my grandmother. But now they're about to give me some answers because they want to shut it down, so we're asking for all cold cases to be over. They tell me my son case is settled, which if we never had a settled case, when there had never been a court date. My sister, they say, they never tried to find out what really happened to my sister when DNA was supposed to be tested and everybody that was involved was supposed to be arrested. And I didn't tell me my grandbaby because he was hit by this car. I'm getting this information now. I need to go to motor vehicle to find out or get records. Records been held dormant for years with my oldest son, Mark William. Dolman, you could never get these records. They say Harry Connick put a seal on it. So they've been sealed since 1983. And I'm standing up here, people, and I'm telling y'all, we gotta do better. We're not listening to each other. We talk at each other, but we don't talk to each other. And until we learn how to talk with each other, all of these things gonna be happening. The surpass is leaving, but he's leaving an ugly, ugly legacy of criminal activities. You know, Pandora box haven't completely opened yet, but it has to open. We want all cold cases to be open. We want Mitch, surpass, and everybody else that involved to be made accountable, because I'm not going anywhere, and I thank you.
All right, let's respond to those.
David Chopin, my brother here, and I saw one of them and Beth back there.
All right, so the first question was, what is resisting? He could be as little as just trying to move away from an officer if he's trying to hand that could be resisting arrest.
Certainly throw you on the ground. They got their foot on your neck, they tasered you. How can they keep saying stop resisting?
Well, interestingly enough, we did some research. We found a case, I don't have the case, but there's a case that we found here in Louisiana which says that resisting unlawful force is not a crime. So, but the thing about it is, that's going to come way down the road. You got to live through the encounter. And fighting that and trying to live through that encounter is the tough part. So I can tell you, fight unlawful force, you may not live, I may be looking at your body at the scene one day. You got to live to fight that another day, would be my advice. But, of course, if you feel like you're about to be killed, and I don't have any doubt that Mr. Bennett felt fear for his safety when dealing with these officers. I don't have any doubt about that. It happens too often. People see the police, and they think something bad is going to happen, and they run off. Or they resist whatever the issue is, because they do fear for their safety.
So you have...
So anything could be resisting. So you just have to be careful of that. But the time to fight is if your life is in danger. But if it's not, you need to live to fight another day. Cameras. Malcolm talked about the cameras. There were three cameras that should have been operating that night. There was the in-car camera. There were body cams issued to each of the two officers that were on the scene that night. We were unable to view any videos. Any videos. As of this day, we have not reviewed one video from the New Orleans Police Department. We are still making sure that they're checking to find out what's up with the equipment, etc. But not one video have we been able to see. And we would have seen it by now, because that's what we do. We want to see that before you interview the officer so we know what questions to ask. Not one video. I'm intrigued about the idea of cameras on the investigators when they get out to the scene. We need to definitely, you pulled miracles in getting these cameras, but maybe we can move a little further and get that done as well. But I'm very intrigued about that and would like to talk to you some more about that. What does the OIPM need? Is Al Mims your uncle? Are you related to him in some way?
To me?
Yeah.
No, but no. We are related, yeah, that's because.
But what I need the same power the OIG has. They can go in and do anything, and I need the same power that the consent decree monitor has. All right? We're drafting off their power right now, and we're working with them on things. I want you to know we've got a racial profiling report that's going to come out. We're working in conjunction with them about that. Right? I'm being starved for resources, but you know, there's more than one way to beat the system, right? So we're trying to help in any way that we can. But I need those same powers and the same resources.
If I had my own dedicated funding, nobody could choke me up. Nobody could starve me for the resources I need to do the job. Now, I've just talked to you about all the things that my little office has tried to do. We tried to monitor this. We've had four uses of force. The phone's continuously ringing with complaint. I had a young man call me today, said, police are in my house right now. Help me, come help me. You know, these are the type of things going on. I don't have the bodies to do all these things, but you know, we're trying to do what we can. We're trying to do what we can. But I need dedicated funding, and I need the same powers, the exact same powers. And that includes subpoena powers. And Ms. Williams, I'm going to have Jordan call you. Didn't she call you previously? We were waiting for you to get information from the district attorney so we can look at your case. You have that information now? Did they give it to you? Some of it. Okay. Well, I want her to make an appointment with you so we can get a look at it. But you bring up a really good point about cold cases in which we were worried about what the police department did. I probably have maybe four or five cases, Adolph Grimes, the Goodman case, a young man named Harold who was 15 years old and was killed in his uniform in 2007, I believe it was. We have all these bodies on the ground. Now, I will read in the paper that they solved a 20-year-old rape case, right? They went back and they found DNA and they're doing all this stuff. Why can't we get the district attorney go back and look at some of these cases and see if justice can be done? We do have to look at what the DA wrote to him. There is a standard of proof, the law. So we do have to look at what, but I'm with you. I'm with you. We need to have these cases looked at.
David, my brother.
Number one, I heard that I can go to the Federal Reserve. Is that where your office is? The Federal Reserve bill that's blocked them off. And I can go there with somebody, and if I want to file a complaint with him, I can just go and do that.
Yes, you can. And awesome. I've got a limited number of brochures out here, but I'll definitely want to
do that. That's great.
Now, Dave, the only thing is, it's like Fort Knox. I don't know if you've ever been in there.
Oh, I've been there. I got you. I'm glad to hear that. Number two is that what happened with Keith Atkinson? Keith Atkinson in Holly Grove. This is Michael Brown. The only difference is that there was a gun found. This is a man who was shot running, and he put his hands up, turned around, and he emptied it, and now silence is violence is saying that why did Frank Minier do this autopsy and not the new guy? It's just so many questions about that case still bother me. And the third thing is that I thought that Mr. Jindal signed the bill, and the fundamental right to own a gun is a fundamental right. Why does it seem like when you stop somebody who happens to be African American, it's like there's a gun in the car, all of a sudden it's like ISIS or ISIL or something, and it's supposed to be, and this guy I thought was a security guard, that I thought did he have a right to own a gun, and is that something the police are finding out, that if somebody has a legal right to own, it's supposed to be different? I mean, is there anything going on with that in terms of?
Okay, hold on, you just want to get him out.
My question is, by what authority could you act the same as the Centenary people at this point in time? You said you're an extension of them. By what authority?
Well, I'm...
Let's get on. My brother in the flannel, the red flannel.
You, sir, right here.
Did you have your hand up? Good, bet.
Okay, you're talking about community involvement, which that are... Actually, we're at a very timely point. We have elections in the fall. We have a state rep seat for Jared Gross's area that's wide open. We have the DA who's running for office again. So far, no opposition, but we hope. Yeah. Then we have a lot of issues that are on the ballot that allow us to use them as tipping points. For instance, the citywide tax that they want to say is for police and fire and will not be allowed to put the homestead exemption under it. So that means that our seniors and our poor homeowners and our working homeowners will be paying double taxes. And these issues are on the ballot, but there are ways for us to address our elected officials, particularly like the tax issue will then go to a vote by the city council, it won't go to a vote of the people. The enabling legislation is what we vote on, but the actual tax itself will go to a city council that is now controlled by the mayor.
Beth, you have a question?
I do want to say, see, if you see this as a way for us to seize this, basically this timeliness of the elections and these different offices as ways for us to bring in, why aren't we having a nationwide search for a police chief? And, you know, how is it that we can get the police monitor to be more independent without a laundry list that was developed tonight? Is this a way for us to have community involvement that is broader and richer than some designated representative who's going to go to inside meetings that we won't be able to attend and talk about the three or four candidates that the mayor has handpicked, who are his childhood friends or whatever they are?
Very good questions, all of them. Dave, what was your first one? You talked about Atkinson owning a gun. What was the first one?
Just about the filing a complaint at the Federal Reserve and how to do it, and you just walk in.
Yeah, you can file a complaint by walking in between 9 and 5, but that bank is very tough. You try it, sometimes people can't get in there without an ID. What we'll do is we'll come out and we'll go across the street to the CC's and take your complaint right there. We'll take it wherever. We also have groups out in the communities who take complaints for us. Safe Streets, Strong Communities, Silence is Violence, Women with a Vision, Breakout, so, and some others like that. But you can call us. 681-3217 is our complaint line. 681-3217. We'll take your complaint on the phone. You never even have to come in. We'll do that. You can also email us at policemonitoraltogether@nolaoig.org. So you can email us. We've taken complaints on Twitter, Facebook, and it's NOLA Police Monitor. We'll take them anywhere. Atkinson case. As you know, the district attorney declined prosecution on that. We're now looking at the administrative side of it. We were privy to looking at the entire investigation. We recommended certain testing of certain evidence, and I don't want to get too gory, but at the scene there was blood evidence, there was a lot of evidence that needed to be tested so that experts can tell us what does that tell us about what went down that night. We tried to get video from the community. People said there was video. We did get some photographs from the community, and that was good, but they all were after the fact. We couldn't get anybody that showed what actually went down that day. The in-car camera recorded the sounds, but did not record the scene. So now you've got to go back and piece it together with scientific evidence, witness recollection. They interviewed them. I'm going to tell you this, and we're not done with the review, but the New Orleans, this investigation was one of the most detailed ones we've seen. There was DNA testing. There was, of course, fingerprints. There was blood splatter evidence. There was trajectory. There was just a wealth of information out there, which will be available once it's a closed case for people to take a look at themselves. We worked with the family and the family's attorney to make sure their questions got answered in there. I'm not done making a call on this one, but there was a lot of evidence for us to have to look at it. We're going to have to make a call at the end of the day based on that evidence. So it's in the administrative side now. So did the officers violate any rules and regulations? The district attorney was just looking at, did they do anything criminal?
Yeah.
Some different standards of
murder. They did murder.
And the question is always with the district attorney and any prosecutor is, can they get a conviction? Do they have, can they meet the burden of proof?
Aren't they trying to shoot and not to kill?
They're trained to stop the threat.
Unless you're in the French Quarter, shooting pictures.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to get killed for that. Oh. You're shooting pictures in the French Quarter, you go home for that.
Well, it's interesting.
If you're stealing Kool-Aid out the corner store, you must get shot.
We didn't have a number of issues, but you have to, and it's difficult to say this, but you have to isolate the force. Use of the force. Was that legal or not? And that's the tough call in this case. And we're gonna talk more about it. What we want to do. We had agreed with this chief, and he's leaving now, but we agreed with him to have a town hall meeting at the end in Holly Grove to talk about this so that you can show all the evidence and get feedback from the public. That's what we'd like to do. We're gonna have to see what this chief will do and when it ends. One more question about owning a gun. Of course, there are gun, you've got concealed permits, etc. We don't even know if there was a gun in this case. We are not conceding that Mr. Bennett had one. So there's still a big issue there. And it's interesting that you bring that up. I don't know if y'all remember this. Earlier this year, there was a white male in Treme area, who had done a home invasion. Mm-hmm. He had shot, pointed the weapon at police, and done a number of things. He didn't fire one shot.
Nope.
Three times with the weapon.
And never fired one shot.
He was standing on the corner, pointing the gun at them, and they get killed.
So we have to ask the questions.
You look like a color.
Don't have guns or being shot and killed, and possibly done. We're not done with that case, but and Atkinson is a different case. It still has a lot of proof that we have to go through, but. We always have to ask, why is it always the same folks?
How was his death classified?
Mr. Chopin, you asked me, how am I acting as an extension of the consent decree monitor?
By what authority?
We are, the consent decree monitor can look at anything they want to look at. And they can partner with anybody. I don't believe it's legal in any way for them to partner with us to work on these things. Our ordinance actually gives us almost the same power to look at the same things that the consent decree monitor does, just without the subpoena power and without the consent decree says they can walk in and do whatever they want to do at any time. Our ordinance doesn't actually say that. But we have an MOU also with the police department, which is a part of the consent decree. And it requires them to cooperate with us and allow us to go out to the scenes to see, view evidence, watch interviews, handle the complaints, see the cases, look in their database, and a number of other things. So we've just teamed up together to work on those things. I don't believe it's a violation of the consent decree in any way.
That being said, could the people with the consent decree say, well, I don't need to be there 5 days a week or 4 days a week because your local police monitor can do what you pay us to do?
We can't though right now. They have a group of 10 to 12 of them, and there are four of us, and I have a person who's working on mediation, which is through a grant. So there are five of us, but that person's going to disappear if we don't keep that grant going. So what we focus on is the monitoring aspects of it, being there when things are going down, the shootings, making sure we're there for that. What they are concentrated on right now is those policies and procedures. And the training. And that is a huge task that is a full-time task. So right now, they're pretty much immersed in that. And so we're trying to handle the monitoring side for them. And for us. Did I miss one thing?
Okay. But that's your
about
question.
About community involvement and using these issues to leverage political power.
Great, and so I have to be very careful about talking about elections at all, so I want to make sure that you understand that I'm not trying to influence that in any way, shape, or
fashion. Public education.
But the New Orleans Police Department did not get in the shape it's in by itself. There was a district attorney, there are judges, there are elected officials,
yes.
Business community, you name it, all around them, egging them on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. All this time. And we have to look at entities influence what they do. If we're saying don't violate the Constitution, the district attorney saying push the envelope, that could be problematic.
Deidre, I cut you off. You want to make a statement or ask a question?
I forgot what you wanted.
All right, we'll come back.
I just wanted to. I mean, Beth kind of like touched upon what I was asking, but you specifically said that you don't have the resources that you need to really, to do your job. And so, how can we get you the resources?
Man.
I mean, is this something that can get on the ballot? Is this something that we need to do a letter writing campaign about? Is this something that we need to make phone calls about? Like, tell us what to do to make sure that you can go out and investigate killer cops.
Let me tell you what I've done so far. Is that we've gone to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone to the Inspector General, who said no. We went to the City Council. He said no, and we couldn't get any champions in the old city council. We're still trying to get one. There was a champion for Vera, keep them going. There's a champion for jail reform, but there's been no champion for us in the council. We need somebody to champion that. That would be wonderful. if you can help us get, and that might be letter writing or calling or.
I'll call Cantel.
Being involved.
We need a chance to.
Well, I mean, we should set up a letter. I mean, if we're, yeah.
If you bring this to tomorrow, the planning session, and we can use it to take that.
Adjusting that ordinance that they put that in seven or in '08?
The charter change vote was in 2008, the ordinance 2009, I think.
And so they need to adjust that ordinance that gives, that puts your office under.
We do, but here's the thing. I need you, if you're gonna vote for that, you gotta be strong in that. They might open that ordinance up and do all kinds of things to diminish what I even have. And so you gotta be vigilant in that.
I remember it.
Okay, Jim first, and then Deidre. And then we're gonna need to get to our updates, because some significant stuff at Baton Rouge.
No, I'm not thinking about you now, you small fry. I'm on this, let me tell you what she can do.
I'm interested in the story, and I apologize for not having been here before, but as long as you are here, the young man that was shot, the upstairs in his own house.
Yeah.
And he was unarmed, and he was standing there in his underwear, and they shot him. How come we haven't heard more about that one in this city? And what's it, I mean.
That officer was convicted, and I want to tell you what happened. He got 4 years?
4 years.
4 years.
He wouldn't even have gotten that. And I'm not trying to, trust me, I'm not trying to do all this, but it was a lot of hard work on our part. From start to finish, getting out on that scene. Those of you who were out there that night trying to keep the peace, that area was about to burn to the ground. Folks were angry. It was red hot. And just watching them to make sure that they weren't planting a gun or planting evidence again to do that, we went to the interviews of the officers. And one of the officers says during the interview, I think I recorded the incident. My deputy police monitor is there, and after the interview, she says to the detective, I think he said he recorded. The detective said, oh, no, he didn't say that. We had to move hell and high water to make them bring him back in and ask him again, did you record the incident? He said, yeah, I've been trying to get all this.
Wow.
That video, it didn't record the shooting, it didn't video the shooting, but it the audio of the shooting, and it told the tale from start to finish what happened when they went in that house. And that's why that officer was even held accountable.
Okay, now, let Deidre, I just want to make sure it's the last, and then Pat, you can give us the update. And then we need to end early enough so that if you want to talk to Ms. Hudson on one-on-one, then y'all have enough time to do that.
I was just going to tell you, I was talking to some other retired teachers the other day, and if you want to stretch your resources, perhaps maybe you can consider hiring, because we don't need a lot of money. We already insured, and all we need is a stipend. So that way, instead of hiring one person, you might be able to get four of us.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Love to talk to you about that.
Mm-hmm. There's power in this room. Last week, you heard about the mayor trying to abolish a judgeship. Last week you said you didn't like that. And you empowered us to work on your behalf to stop it. And we did that. Let me introduce you to people who were very instrumental in it. All of the people who went to Baton Rouge today, please stand. Come on, Deidre. You know what we're talking about. Stand up. When we talk about taking action, these people took action. They took the time out to drive to Baton Rouge and sit there in front of the judge and to monitor that court. That judge looked out there, and not only did he see us, we have friends in Baton Rouge. We sent the information, same information you got, and they were there as well, all day. Now, we needed to be involved in that when the mayor was suing the Secretary of State and suing our own clerk of criminal court. We needed citizen interveners, people who were registered voters, people who had a history. Stand up, Beth. You bet. Beth, let's see. I think she's the only one that's here that signed on as an intervener. But that gave us the opportunity to be involved in that lawsuit, and the city, their attorneys opposed our intervening. They knew what we were doing. They knew the story before they got there. But they opposed that. So we opposed it. But we went on behalf of the Voting Rights Act. And we went on to protect your votes. And I want to thank you for being the kind of group that you are. That was a significant intervention. It's a significant win. And I want to give you the credit because you said it was wrong and you wanted it to be stopped. So give yourselves a hand. I don't like what I'm hearing. Ferguson is in New Orleans. Right. Ferguson is every day.
Right.
I don't like what I'm hearing. This lady gives us a report for 1 week. From 1 week! And you got brutality that she discovered that was reported to her. So much brutality that didn't get to her desk. We live in a state of crisis. Do you want, is there something, you're the most powerful group in town. Power concedes nothing with what?
Without demand.
You need to move on this, Malcolm. You need to move on this, Tom. All of us, we got some power to do some things. As long as we use it. When we don't use it, we lose it. Mm-hmm. This should not happen. This should not be the report next week. Mm-hmm. Hope sister can come back next week and give us a report. I'm confident that it might be worse. So what do you want to do with that?
Invite Michael Harrison right here, right now. Michael Harrison, right now? Get here.
Stacy Head.
No,
they definitely
no. That thing, man. That's Miss Bang.
That's next week.
Yes.
Who?
City Council will be voting for that.
I know I'm there.
You have you.
Want your welfare in that doggone Walmart, all the improvements.
I put the question out to you. What do you want to do? And I'm not getting much back. But it's clear to me.
One of the things that's happening. Friday night, we're having another march in solidarity with Ferguson. I reminded people on Sunday that Ferguson was New Orleans.
Yeah.
And that we had cases here that were still unresolved. And the difference between us and Ferguson is the people in Ferguson have strong backs.
There you go.
Straight
backs.
That's
right. There you go.
They have said that we are not going to rest until we get some justice. Mm-hmm. And this being the Big Easy, we say, well, we might get angry for a couple of days, but you throw us a sign this Sunday, we'll forget about it. So the question is, first of all, I'm inviting everybody here to come out on Friday, but most importantly, we've got to get our young black men who are the victims. The young black men, I speak to them every other day on the streets, I say, you're the ones being harassed by the cops. When they stop me, they look at my grade,
they
give me a pass. But these young guys are the ones who get in conflict, and yet they are not moving. We have got to get them involved and get them to understand that they could, in fact, be Wendell Allen, Justin Sipp,
Keith Atkins.
Yeah, all of these young men who are victims of these police, and we've got to get them involved. Because this is an issue for the black community in Maine. And unfortunately, and so far, our mobilizations have been mainly young white radicals in the city.
Isn't that amazing?
And, but they're willing to fight. Yeah. And we need to join with them as our allies
They don't have any food. That's awful.
And, well, that's quite a privilege, but we'll talk about that some other time. But we need to take a stand, and we need to get involved. And so I'm inviting folks to come with us on Friday, but there's other meetings. We've got to do some teach-ins. We've got to go to these high schools, we've got to go to the college campuses, and we've got to tell folk about the history of police terror right in the city, and our efforts to bring about constitutional policing. They had the last public meeting, there were less than 20 folks come out to get a report from the monitor. So the monitor is not getting any pressure from the public to do their job. I mean, it's enough that me and Randolph and now we're following closely, but citizens got to be concerned that we have a constitutional police force. We've got an opportunity here to reemphasize the consent decree as well as to say that we want a word in the new police chief. We don't want a police chief that has been trained and had all their experience in the corrupt New Orleans Police Department, because we know that they wouldn't recognize the constitutional police if they hit them on the head. We've got to bring somebody into the city with fresh eyes who understands that the reorganization of the police department must be done on a constitutional basis, and we've got to get rid of all these old dead heads who are resistant to change and want to continue to do things that they always do.
Go by 2 lane and Broad in the morning. We got a line for the biggest scam in the city, drug testing. That's from the top of the step, almost to South Vice Street. On last Wednesday, Ms. Husky, maybe you could help. Please tell me for the last 30 days how many people were arrested for municipal charges. On last Wednesday night, nothing less than 500 people was arrested. People I saw had uniforms going to work Wednesday, but in jail Thursday. But warrants from 1998, traffic tickets from Mesquite, Texas. At the end of the day, we need to get to the criminal court in the morning for that drug test tonight. You pass it to all those people out there, they got to stand in line and get searched to go in. You go to traffic and municipal court every day.
I'm there
every morning. Tickets for the least little thing. So there's a lot of abuse. There's the municipal arrest that is going on for the last 30 days, and they are killings every day. This is going on. There was a sweep last Wednesday, and I close by saying this: when 65% of the business on Aretha Castle Hill was owned by African Americans, they purposely put the mission center. And we asked, why don't you put it somewhere else? On Earhart, they say, y'all acting like Nibby, not in my backyard. The regentrification that happens on Aretha Castle Hill, I can name only three owners: Ashe, Animal Building, and Mr. Lawrence Martin. Other than that, then it took over Aretha Castle Hill. And now, the homeless and the mental health people is a problem.
Yeah.
So, and that's the game they playing with. Mm-hmm. So, look at the municipal arrest in the last 30 days.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to let y'all close out on this, but I didn't understand. You're a candidate? So it is our tradition to give a candidate at least 3 to 5 minutes. We want to make sure that you have that 3 to 5 minutes, and then we'll close this out.
All right,
one time.
Good evening.
Just tell us your name and your age.
Again, I'm Monique Barry. I don't think I've been also set up. And I am a candidate for judge in Orleans Civil District Court. So although most of what you're talking about wouldn't be something that I would have in my jurisdiction, there is one thing that really would fall in that court, and that's going to be domestic violence. And it does have a direct relation to criminal court. But just to give you a little bit about myself, I'm born and raised here in New Orleans. I'm the youngest of three children of Dr. Walter Barrio and Sylvia Barrio. My mother is here. Went to most of my school here in New Orleans until I left to go to law school in Baton Rouge, and then again in Miami, came back. I've worked in the court, not just as a law clerk for multiple judges, but also as a minute clerk for Judge Bruno for the last 5.5 years. But I've also worked there as a practicing attorney. And what sets me apart from my opponents in this race is that I have a blended family. So I have my own daughter. I also have my stepdaughter. My husband and I raised together. We know a lot of the things that people go through on a day-to-day basis in family court. I've experienced them personally. I've helped people with them in the court for many years. And I know that these are things that whoever wins this election, and hopefully it will be me, but that person has to be compassionate and respectful of every individual that comes through, regardless of their financial or economic background, regardless of their race, regardless of their educational background or work status. And that is something that I'm not sure my other opponents understand. I understand it because I've dealt with it from 2009 to through 2011. Judge Bruno sat on the domestic bench, so I dealt with the parties themselves as well as their attorneys, and we're talking about people from all different backgrounds. But I think what's important to recognize right now is, given the state of our economy, particularly here in the city, there are a lot of people who have to come into the court system and they have to represent themselves. They don't have a choice. That if the public service agencies that represent the indigent are overworked, just like most agencies that help the poor. And so because they can't get them in a timely fashion, people often come and they choose to represent themselves because they can't afford to wait. They need to deal with custody issues today. They need to make decisions about their children's schooling today. And so you need someone who understands that. You also need someone who understands that, okay, maybe August is not the best time to go on vacation. It might be convenient for me and it might be convenient for my family, but that's often a time when issues arise in families, as would be Thanksgiving and Christmas time, because people's emotions get involved when you start talking about time with the family, money being spent, and when they can't work it out, they want to come to court. Now, I do believe that the court should not micromanage the decisions of anyone's family, but I also understand that sometimes a third party, when they don't have a direct involvement, meaning they're not personally attached to it, there's no emotion for them, they can help someone facilitate a decision that works for everyone. But when they're not willing to work it out, and I don't have a problem making decisions that may be tough. I understand that not everyone is going to be happy all the time. And sometimes the best that you can hope for is that the parties walk away with, it's okay. So I would ask for your support.
Any questions concerning this specific candidacy or this court?
What court is it?
I'm sorry, it is Orleans Civil District Court. It's Division H. It is going to be designated as a permanent family court. It will not transition to the general civil docket as the courts usually do in this civil court. So it's going to forever be a family court, which is something that we need so that families have some consistency.
Is there an incumbent?
There is no incumbent. It is an open seat.
Who are you competing?
Right. I'm sorry, say again?
Who are you running against?
Okay, I thought that was what, I just wanted to make sure I heard you correctly. Right now, qualifying is Wednesday, but as of right now, I understand that Janet Ahern is running, as is Richard Kirk, and another young woman, Michelle Scott Bennett. And I'm sure they're all fine attorneys, but as I said, I have the experience, and I mean, we need someone who's best prepared for the job. I'm not saying they're not prepared, but I'm ready to hit the ground running first day. I've already managed a domestic docket.
Any other questions? Again, candidate or court?
Candidate. Which position on guys has done 10, 15, 20 years and come out of DOC after doing that flat time? And then once they've gotten out, they're arrested the next day for 20 years, 10 years, 15 years back child support. What's your position on that?
That's a difficult one to answer. When you're in jail, you can only make so much money.
Right.
17 cents again. Right. I'm just telling you. I understand what you're saying. I will say this. Right. That it is not the decision of the court to arrest them for that. The charges are generally brought by the district attorney's office, and they will come before the court. And every case would be taken on an individual basis. So understand that what I'm telling you is just a general statement, because I can't give you a specific answer. What I would do is talk with the individual person, tell me, do you have any savings? Do you have any way that you can get some funding? Because although I understand that this person may not have any funds, the child still needs to eat. The child still has to have some clothes.
And to be honest, when you're talking about children and issues of child support, it is what's in the best interest of the child. Now, we will go from there. What can we work out? Okay. And to put it in regular people's terms, can you put something on? Can we work something out? Now, if you're walking in here and you have some brand new high-priced tennis shoes, you have the latest designer outfit on, and you tell me you just got out of jail, that says to me that there's someplace you may be able to get something. Can we take this back? Give me something a little less expensive. What can we do for my child? I need you to show me that you care about the child.
Okay, I hate to interrupt. That's our 5 minutes. Now, is there anybody else in here running for anything? I mean, aside from your life. All right. Let's close this out. Then we're going to show y'all. And let's let Sister Hudson have the final say, and then we'll pray.
I just want to say right quick and follow what Malcolm has indicated. The consent decree monitoring meeting is very important. They're supposed to meet quarterly and give updates in terms of the types of works that they're doing. I want to say that everyone in here should take ownership yourselves. Go to the internet and just plug in use of force and get educated in terms of use of force by police departments. And let me read a quick excerpt, one sentence, from an actual training document that's in the state of Louisiana, and it corresponds with what Ms. Hudson has indicated on that court decision concerning unlawful arrests and the individuals submitting to the police, and it's actually registered in the state. And I'm gonna read it. It's under the NC of use of force to effect an arrest. A person must submit peacefully to a lawful arrest, but there is no requirement that he submit peacefully to an unlawful arrest. That is a case law study. It is real. We have partnered as Malcolm in our consent decree that we put together with our group, and we submitted that to the Department of Justice and to the court also. And let me say this, we talk about Ferguson, my last comment. It's different in this country, it has always been different in this country when the African American community respond to defend themselves. And it's going back again to the 50s and the 60s and probably the early 70s, where if the police can't handle it, they call out the National Guard for our community. And we need to understand that some of us are old enough and we've seen it coming up. Many of you are younger and you all don't know nothing about what you're talking about. But you see it and you think this is right now. We think this is brand new, is what I'm saying. It's not brand new. This is very serious. They're going back to the old forms where they hide the Klan mindset. They're protecting it, and it's not going to be any justice. They're turning around the decisions on the